time. So I'll start with a funny story. My name is Italo Vignoli, and in Italy my name is very, very unusual, although it's Italo means born in Italy. So when I came here yesterday morning, I said, my name is Italo, and I'm the only Italo for sure. And the reality is that here at FISL, there are three Italo. So there are more Italo in Brazil than in Italy, which is absolutely weird. But anyway, this is what happens when you carry an totally unusual name. I mean, in Italy, it's really totally unusual. We are less than 200 in all of Italy with my name. And this has to do with historic reasons, but anyway, I'm not going to do a presentation on my name, but on LibreOffice, so that's what I'm going to talk. Anyway, the remote is always a little bit slow. I'm not a developer. I'm not a lawyer, but I'm not a developer, although I have 6 contributions to the LibreOffice code. I've just got rid of 6 useless comments, which was quite easy, and it was the maximum. I can tell you because we have been myself and Olivier and Bjorn who are there. We The build dependencies of Thank you. And I But with the time and people coming into the community in 2005 and 2006, the community was a lot more mature. There were a lot of native language projects. Brazil BR office was already there. In Italy there was Plio, there was Frodev in Germany, La Mouette in France, many local teams, and a large number of volunteers worldwide. So the community patches for the code. And then, of course, you, if you participate to the so the, a growing project that was at the risk of going back because it was too complex. So we wanted to take that and in 2009, Oracle acquired Sun. It was a tactical acquisition. It was not a strategic acquisition. Some people say that it was a strategic acquisition, but Oracle in the screen where they list strategic acquisition, they not list, they don't list Sun. So this is the proof. I mean, you can acquire a company for tactical reason. It's perfectly okay. I'm not questioning the fact that you are acquiring a company for tactical reason. But if you buy it for tactical reason, of course, you buy for a couple of products and you don't mind about the other products. And the two products that Oracle was carrying when they acquired Sun were the Spark processor and the Spark stations, so the servers that were serving the Oracle databases, and MySQL, that is was of course coherent with the Oracle business of databases. They were not interested in all the other stuff, but this I think is a, this is something that was a decision of Oracle, so I'm not questioning what Oracle decided, but it was perfectly easy to understand for all of us that were in the community of OpenOffice that the days of OpenOffice were counted in terms of life of the product. So at that time, we instead of having the last supper, we had the first supper in Budapest, And myself and Olivier Allot, the group of the founders, or the majority of the founders of the Document Foundation, we had a supper in Budapest, and during the Open Office conference, actually. And on a few weeks after, so September 28, 2010, we forked. And we forked at the time, of course, it was a real bet. In total, the number of people behind the project was, let's say, just exaggerating a little bit, 50. And of course, in 50 people, you fork a 12 million line of code software, and you want to put together the same infrastructure that was put in place by a company like Sun. So it's, let's say, we were a little bit, you know, I'm not even young, so you cannot even say that that was done because I'm a young, crazy man. I was an old crazy man at the time, and I think that all of us, we share the same crazy wishes that we are now fulfilled. And we completely and if you are under an umbrella, and if it rains, you get wet. If you get outside, you get wet. So what happens is that everyone tends to stay within the borders that are given by the company. And this is okay, but it doesn't foster creativity, it doesn't foster innovation, it doesn't foster new things. So what we did is just, we took the umbrella, we reversed. And instead of being protected by the umbrella, we jumped inside the umbrella, and be it a mixing bowl or a canoe, like someone says. But the fact is that everyone has to go into the same directions. Otherwise, the project fails. There's no one anymore protecting up there. The project is on its own, and the project grows as much as the project members are able to sustain the project itself. So what we did was exactly to completely subvert the situation and put the community, instead of under the umbrella, at the helm of the new project that was born at that time. And we founded the project on five pillars, which I think this is something where we really do not want to find compromises. So copyleft license, no contributor agreement, meritocracy, community governance, and vendor independence. What do they mean? Copyleft. The copyleft license has been instrumental in it's not a philosophical, it's an ethical choice, and it's a practical choice. We want to stay with the copyleft license because they would not be protected by any other free software license. I'm a volunteer, I don't want to have another software license on the code. I don't want it to be the Apache or MIT or Berkeley or any other. We are on a copyleft license, and this is going to stay as it is. Why this? IBM, and with permissive license. In fact, I would say that the only company attracted by permissive license on top of the open office code is IBM. And of course, this means that there would be a single company at the helm of the project, and this is what we don't want to have. So, if you want, this is my view. Copyleft is protects the community, permissive protects corporations, and we are a community-based project. So another, why no contributor agreement? I think this is visually explained. This is the Fedora project. The data you see the number of active contributors where it went. Just because, as Bjorn said yesterday, not having contributor agreement protects the independence of the project. To change the license, to do any change, you have to get together all the people that have contributed, which makes it impossible. And this protects the project. It doesn't make it weaker, it makes it stronger, because it's almost impossible to control the software base. Unless you are a member of the community, you contribute, you are respected, and therefore you accept the other principle, which is meritocracy. If you want something done, do it. You will lead the project, or anyway, you will be recognized. And there are many examples in our community of this fact. Community governance, we have members, in Brazil there are many members. Members elect their representatives, so it's a meritocracy, but it's also a democracy in the sense that inside the community is the community that decides who are the representative and who is elected to bring forward the project. And last thing, it's in the vendor independence. We have in any of the boards of the bodies. This is because we set views, not just from one, because otherwise we would just reproduce in one single company shaping the future of the project, which is something that we don't want. For instance, this is probably the headquarter of a Microsoft-based foundation. You see the window there. We don't want to get to this situation. And we don't want to open standards. Office OpenXML, it's supposed to be an open standard by Microsoft. There is just a small problem. You don't see the number, but that number is February 29, 1900, a day that never existed, but exists only for Microsoft Excel. So they are so strong that they can tweak standards, but then this means that that product that everyone thinks is a reference for its market, it's really a buggy software. I think that we have to stop having the attitude that Microsoft is doing everything right. Microsoft is doing a lot of things wrong, starting from the fact that everyone in the world respects the Gregorian calendar but Microsoft. Even Chinese people and people and Muslim, they respect our calendar. Is a reference for them, but it's not a reference for Microsoft. So why we should respect that company? So we started the Document Foundation to develop LibreOffice, and you know the different product: Writer, Calc, Graph, Impress, Draw, Base, Math. And LibreOffice became quickly the standard. because we are nicer than anyone else. It's because we do things better for the Linux distribution, to the point that we are the logical choice for Linux distribution as the software productivity. And I can just make a joke and say that this is a picture of our developers the day that we forked, because the number was not a lot higher than that. Actually, if we look at the number of for June, because it's we need some more days to get all the contribution on Git to get to make the statistics. But at the end of May 2000, but this is a free software project, so these are people that are working on their spare time, that are working when they have something to do. So it would be just insane to think that this is a group of full-time developers. It's a group of people that are contributing to the project. But it's very important. You can see there's not a single month where we did not have at least a couple of new developers. Many of them stayed, many of them left. And this, I think, is intrinsic with free software project. We cannot think that everyone that starts contributing to a free software project stays there for life. This is the beauty of free software. And one of the reasons for that are the easy hacks. This, I think, is a brilliant idea that I think has been shared by Michael Mix and Callum McNamara. They, of course, activities, the coding activities on the code base in tiny chunks, which are easy to do, of course, for people that is able to do some development, not for me, for instance, but if you are able to work with C++, if you're able to work with XML for the help, translate comments from German into English, there are some trivial things to do. Of course, if you take this as a monolithic project, then it's scary for everyone to get into the software. But if you do small, really, each single commit is probably quite easy to understand for a developer, then you make it very easy for newcomers to start contributing. Of course, then you have to add a number of other activities. So this is Michael Mix mentoring someone young at a meeting and showing him what to do side by side, having the two screens side by side. Then we had a lot of presentation. This is Thoughts and Barons from Hamburg and from SUSE. And Hackfest. Hackfest, this is a Hackfest in we have a Hackfest in Brazil, we have two Hackfest in Germany already, and we will have Munich as well. We will have a Hack Night during the conference in Milan. We are trying to organize the first Hackfest, real large Hackfest in the United States. We want people to come and work with us, and why not to eat pasta? So this, my role at Hackfest, I'm cooking pasta, so I cannot hack code, I hack spaghetti. And I can tell you that developers like spaghetti. From the quantity I've cooked the last time, I can tell you that for one single Hackfest, I cooked 9 kilos of pasta with 3 kilos of pecorino, just for one. I mean, there were 30 people, so I did the amount for 60, and it disappeared with 30. So that's but I'm sure that I contributed to a couple of features, not to a couple of bugs with my pasta. What is very important, what is very important, before I show the growth of the committers, but of course the growth of the committers has no meaning if there is not a stable number of committers month over month. And these are the last 24 months, from June 11 to May 13. And you can see that there is a slight growth. We went from around 50 to around 100 contributors per month. And if you look at this, this is the total number of active contributors over the last 12 months. And this is growing, went up from 320 to 345, I think. These are of the project, because we have a stable contributors, and we have over the last 12 months we have a growing number of people contributing to the project. And if you look at the top contributors, the top developers, what is very important is that you find a lot of volunteers. Of course, you find Red Hat, you find SUSE, you find Canonical somewhere there. But you find a lot of volunteers. Volunteer. This, of course, adds to the strength and the solidity of the project. These are the top developers, so these are the ones that develop more code or develop more patches, create more patches, solve more bugs than others. If they were only from one company, that would put the entire project at risk, because if that single company left, then the project was quite weak. Here we have, of course, we have a couple, two or three companies that are key contributors, but we have a number of volunteers in the top developers that are able to sustain the project. This makes the project very solid, and I can tell you that the day that we forked, it was not the same case. At that time, if Red Hat and SUSE left the project, we probably would close down in a month. Now we will go on. And this, I think, is an incredible achievement of the developers. It's not an achievement of the project, but especially of the developers, because we have been able to grow a small project at the time into one of the largest, actually the largest project for software productivity after Firefox and Chrome. But the largest one, independent, because Firefox and Chrome is backed by Google, and Firefox is backed by Mozilla Foundation, which is backed by Google money. So that's is a different story. We are independent. We live thanks to company contribution and thanks to donation. So that's is a different story, to put together a project of this size just based on independence, totally independent from a single company. And the development model, of course, is different. We have completely changed the development model that was there at some time. And our developer model is very similar to the is overseeing the and Björn is a member that is overseeing the development of the code. It's not an anarchical project. It's controlled, there is discipline, newcomers are more controlled than old comers, people that is that has been able to commit for months can go into master by himself, while other have 2-3 checks by others, and so on. Of course, there is, because we care about quality. So, and people that has followed the evolution of LibreOffice since LibreOffice 3.0, that was the product at the time of the fork, has probably realized that the quality, the overall quality of the product has improved dramatically, especially with the last three releases, which are 3.5, 3.6, and 4.0. And of course, there is a reason for that. We have put together an infrastructure, we have put together such a large project, and we have Marcus, I think this one, it's a student, a German student, I think 24, 25 years old, that started just by contributing, is now one of the top calc hackers, and is the one that coordinates the test. So we went from around 10 tests at 3.4, we are at over 120 with 4.0, and it's still improving in terms of number of tests, and in order to catch bugs, regressions, before the product gets to the user. Then, of course, like any software, LibreOffice will always have some bugs and some regression, but this is because developers are humans and not machines, so they can make mistakes like anyone else. So that's something that is intrinsic with software. So at the end, what we have done in the first 3 years, we have paid down a technical debt that was the one that was visualized by the first slide that I show you, by the fatty OpenOffice. So we have reduced the footprint, translated German comments, removed that code, removed the deprecated libraries, and so on. So that's today there is the code, and this, as a user, you won't see that a lot, but as a developer you will see it a lot. The code is a lot cleaner and leaner than before, and of course this allows us to implement new features on something new that would have been impossible with the previous code. And of course there is a side effect. The effect is that we have an increasing number of users. We are not counting downloads, we are counting people that ask for updates. Because if you ask for update, it means that you are using the software. Downloads, you can download the software and then never install it. While if you ping for update, and this is from February 2012 to March 2013, so it's not updated to the last month, but this shows you that we have went from around 20,000 to around 100,000, so 5 times as many active users in 1 year, which is extremely fast growth, and this gives you an idea of what we have achieved in terms of growth. And just to give you a reference, of course this is based on a analysis mode, but because many people say LibreOffice is free software, so its value is nothing. Now today, if you want to start the project again, you should put on the table something like $400 million. So that, I think, is just to give you a measure of what we did in 3 years as volunteers. We did a comparable activity of a company investing $400 million on a single product. And of course, important success. The city of Munich that switched to LibreOffice. The French government, this is the body of the French government in charge of the migration to LibreOffice. So it's not the logo of the French government, it's the logo of the MIMO, who is the body of the French government. The French government is implementing LibreOffice on 500,000 desktops, which is rather a large, of course, in several ministries, in several organizations. The Saudi Arabian government, they not only use LibreOffice, but they have a group of people that are developing LibreOffice. So they started in early 2012, and today they are one of the largest group of contributors and have recently become a member of our advisory board. The advisory board is a body that allows us to interact in a formal way with companies. It's not a question of being influenced or influencing. It's a question of creating a table around which you have different entities that for different reasons have an interest in LibreOffice, and so they can contribute ideas, they can contribute experiences, and in some cases they can help us in getting into marketplaces or like Mota to get in a better shape into a geographical market, which is quite important. The city of Limerick in Ireland, the city of Las Palmas in Spain, the Chicago Public Library System. Of course, the United States are a very difficult or a very challenging market for us because Microsoft is a US-based company and we are, in fact, a Microsoft competitor. But it starts to grow the interest with LibreOffice in the States. There are a couple of very large companies that, of course, are looking at the product and in due time will decide if to migrate or not. But I think that it is very important that they are looking at us, at LibreOffice, as a viable opportunity for migrating. It's not just out of curiosity, because when you talk about 300,000 employees, you cannot start a pilot for migration just because you want to spend your time in a nice way. If you start thinking about a migration of that size, with employees speaking over 60 different languages and offices in I think more than 50 countries, you for sure you are thinking seriously at a product. Then you may decide or not to migrate, but it means that we have created a project that raises the interest of global companies, and this is a real achievement because OpenOffice was never able to get to this point. OpenOffice was never able to raise, apart from in Brazil with Petrobras, which is a Brazilian company, but was never able to raise the interest of global companies, and I'm talking about banks active in 50 countries or pharmaceutical companies active in 70 countries. I cannot, of course, talk about the names, but it's real. I mean, they're really evaluating the product. They're really looking at the product in a serious way. They're solving bugs to see if they can deploy LibreOffice on over 300,000 desktops. So that, I think, is a huge achievement that in the past was not possible. Some new features. These are new features. I'm just showing the latest new ones. So these are range comments. This is for compatibility with Microsoft formats. The rewrite or improvement of the RTF filters. RTF is a so-called standard format, but it's a standard created by Microsoft, and we know how friendly it is with standards Microsoft as a company. DocX annotations. This is very important in enterprise environment, in support of CMIS protocol, and of course this is something that has still to improve. Alfresco repositories, you can access Microsoft repositories directly from inside LibreOffice. This is not an end user feature, this is a corporate feature. Microsoft Publisher Import, this was a long time request of users. The new widget, Olivier will talk. A couple of features. This in 4.2 into documents. Then, of course, this opens the incredibly wide discussion on which font you can embed and which font you cannot embed because of the license. So we all need to educate our counterparts in embedding the right font for interoperability, not embedding the font just for the sake of embedding nice fonts. The font means if you can embed the font, you allow the person that receives your document to read the document exactly as it was created on your computer. So embedding fonts means increased interoperability. So it has to be managed with wisdom, not just because it's nice. Of course, yesterday I was in a panel talking about open document format. This is very important. This is must educate people around the use of formats like this. I think that in many cases we do accept we still think that what Microsoft is doing is good, so it's good to exchange documents in doc. No, it's not good, it's bad. We should start telling people that send us documents in proprietary format, you're not doing a good thing for interoperability. So you're limiting my freedom of reading your documents in the proper way. Too many times we excuse ourselves because we have sent a document that a Microsoft user cannot read. I think that is his fault, not my fault, if he cannot read my document. It's not my fault. He's using a proprietary format with a vessatory license, which I don't want to sign. So I have the right to refuse his document. And I'm an old grumpy Italian, so I can really be a bad man with people that sends me documents in the wrong format. And I have no problem in being unpleasant. So don't send me a doc. And this is a feature that is not known enough, is hybrid PDF. You can save any LibreOffice document in PDF, embedding the ODF, which means that you can open the document from LibreOffice and have the document which is totally under your control. So you have a total freedom of editing your document, and the other and your PDF, which is a standard format and is not tied to a proprietary reader. but it offers a wide choice of free reader, proprietary reader, whatever reader in the world. And we, of course, now want to grow the ecosystem. We have, let's say that challenge one, develop the product, we have solved that. Now challenge two, grow the ecosystem. And grow the ecosystem means provide a reference to the market in order for the market, and I think about individuals and I think about corporation, feels comfortable about deploying LibreOffice. You deploy that doesn't give any surprise to the end user. So a predictable path, of course, with all the problem that we know, but something that has been tested and all the tests and the experiences have been shared in different market in order to have a better reference in comparison with what is provided by proprietary company. We have the strength of the community and we must use the strength of the community. The community is a lot smarter than any proprietary company by itself, because if we take the collective brain of the community, at the end we have a better quality than any proprietary company is able to buy with their money. And I have finished. If you want to write me, this is my email address. Don't send a doc, please. And or if you want to, experience. And if you have questions, of course, you're welcome to ask questions. I think we have 5 to 6 minutes. And of course, sorry for speaking English, but you can ask questions in Portuguese. I understand Portuguese perfectly. And when I say perfectly, it's perfectly, really. No, I mean, I understand Portuguese. They can testify that I understand Portuguese. I'm shy about speaking it because I live in Italy where I don't have any chance of speaking Portuguese. No questions, so I'm unusually good. I've solved all the doubts of everyone in the room. The mic is not working.
Mobile e a versão em nuvem do LibreOffice.
My expectation about the mobile and the cloud version, I really would like to see smarter companies in the marketplace that understand the importance of those two versions and give us and help us or fund the development. Unfortunately, I must say, we have talked with several manufacturers of Android phones and tablets, and they do not understand why for them it would be important to have a full version of LibreOffice. And I'm fairly disappointed by their short sight, because can you imagine what it could be, a 10-inch tablet, Android tablet, with a full version of LibreOffice working on it? You can probably, I'm not telling you to leave your PC at home forever, but you could probably and safely go on a travel for a number of days just with your tablet. You cannot do that today because the productivity is not there. And we know that the Office Suite, which are on Android, are as small toys, are not Office Suites. They probably have a dozen features. They're not working really as the user expects that. So of course, we are working on that, and we are working as volunteers. It takes time. If we could find a company that helps us in reducing the time, we probably would be able, at the end of, let's say, early 2014, to deliver the products. If we don't find these companies, it will probably be later than early 2014. It's difficult to give any date because it's first because I'm not a developer, so I don't know what there is really what is necessary to do on the code. But second, because it would be unfair to give a date today, I would really like. To see a company coming in, it would be peanuts for them. I mean, they're making millions of dollars with their tablets, and they could probably ramp up their sales just by giving us, let's say, $500,000, which for them would be peanuts. Means less than 1 week of sales. So it's really nothing if you think the difference that would make to their tablet. We have 1 minute.
No questions.
I mean, I'm around if you want to ask questions. I'm usually asking answering politely in private as well, even if I look like a bad man. And I'm very gentle, so that's okay. Although I'm Italian, which doesn't make usually gentle people, but anyway.